question. We would basically like to run it very freely. So we have no answers on basically how to financial shows. There are huge challenges, but there's also opportunities. So if at any point you want to join in, you have any comments, if you have the magical answer, please put your hand up and please let us know, because we'd like to run this basically a discussion.
Can you take the mic? Thank you.
Okay, so a little bit about myself. My name is Debbie MacDonald. I've been in the kids industry for over 20 years, most of that time in the broadcast side. I'm now an independent consultant and I'm working with companies all around the globe, mainly on the creative side of the business. That's where my passion is. And to my left we have Angus Fletcher, and I've known Angus far too many years, and we met when he was president of the Jim Henson Company Group. So basically we're here to explore what the opportunities and the challenges are of getting your shows financed. In the UK, when I started in this business, there were three children's channels. There was Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, and a now dead channel called the Children's Channel. And it was hugely challenging trying to get the best shows at that time, the three channels. There are now over 30 channels in the UK, and you would expect that with over 30 channels, there are huge opportunities for producers to get their shows made, because there is much more choice. However, there are less slots. Broadcasters are under huge commercial pressures. There is an economic crisis going on globally, so budgets have dramatically dropped. And even though there are new players in the marketplace, producers are still having a tough time getting their shows financed. Now, Angus has been around for a very, very long time. He can almost remember when TV was in black and white. So he has seen many, many challenges. And he describes himself as a gypsy television executive producer with a caravan and a herd of sheep. He lives in the country. And he also has a love of fireworks, so enjoys blowing things up. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to Angus Fletcher.
Morning. Can you hear me without a mic? Because then I can't look at my paper.
No, I've been told to use a mic. I hate mics.
Can you vaguely hear me now? This is going to be a bit of a ramble, I'm afraid, because I'm not a trained speaker as such. I suppose, as Debbie says, yeah, I'd probably have been around a bit, probably too long. But since the sort of Henson days, I've been working with a number of different companies, doing Egmont Publishing. I've worked with Zodiac, currently with DHX. Egmont, as I say, Toons, a big animation studio in India, part of a larger Forreston group, and a very interesting company in Austria, sort of Austria and Germany. So an interesting mix of things, which probably allows one to have a little bit of an observation of what's going on around about. But picking up on the theme of great age and things past, I was going to kick off. I had a really interesting interview, or heard a really interesting interview. Obviously, didn't have this, he's dead. But an ex-British Prime Minister by the name of Harold Macmillan, who, among many other things, was infamous for taking us into military engagement in Suez in the 50s, which didn't go very well. But he also was Prime Minister, but owner of one of the world's, at that point, certainly biggest publishing companies, being Macmillan. And I was struck in the course of this interview that he, when he went on a prime ministerial trip around Africa in about 1963, he conveniently took his own sales rep with him as he toured around Africa and went to meetings not only about Britain, the Commonwealth, etc., but also set up sales meeting and a network of educational sales and publishing constructs in Africa. And I thought, that's the way to do it. Separately, there was an interview with him in 1986 when I thought he was remarkably prescient. He was probably about 87, 88, and he was being asked about what might be around the corner in publishing. And obviously, this is early days, there was no such thing as an ebook. But he was talking about what technology might happen and what might change publishing. And he was saying, I have no idea what is going to happen. I know it will be exciting and I know it will be different. But he also said, behind the scenes will always lie the mind of a writer. And I thought that was both interesting in the purity of his comment, but also just the observation of new media. Nigel Pickard, who some of you might know, who runs Zodiac Kids, and like me, obviously not Debbie, who's 21, but like me, has been around for far too long. And we used to chat and talk about the info barn, the superhighway, whatever the word of the moment was. But one of the things we kind of agreed amongst ourselves was that nothing had fundamentally changed because broadcasters still funded telly and media. And I think finally that comment has probably, or that world has begun to change. So we're probably slightly not, if not eating our words, we're forced to have a different discussion, which is clearly very difficult if you're just a couple of old Statler Waldorf farts in the balcony. As I said, sort of time spent in the industry allows one a little bit of observation, and also back in the days of black and white, as Debbie says. There are no answers at the moment, so what I was proposing to do was have a little ramble around what's going on, what has been, where we are, and at any point interrupt me when I get too boring. Feel free to walk out the door, because it's very convenient to stand there, because when it gets really boring you can just slip out and nobody notices you. More embarrassing here, because you have to go to the fire exit. But feel free to go, but feel more free to say something. If only shut up, that would be fine too. Don't. Sorry? No? I can't shut up already. So, in a very general way, what used to happen all those years ago when we were first trudging around down here and it was still raining, was that we would make something, or a film would get made, television would get made in the kids' space, and everyone else would just fall into line. There was a publishing deal, there was a licensing deal, there was international television sales. Everything just worked effortlessly. There was plenty of money around. It all happened. And fun enough, now it doesn't. So what has changed? And I think the simple fundamental answer to that, among many, is that everyone stopped making money. But other things changed as well. The obvious stuff, technology changed. I don't really need to discuss that, you know what I'm talking about. If we don't realise how technology is changing, then we probably should scuttle away right now and retire. But it's the interesting thing about it is it's still changing all around us as we speak. I think the other big interesting thing is that the audience has dramatically changed. And we all speak rather glibly, and we read rather pompous articles talking about how children engage with media and what they're doing, and they're multitasking, or they're multi-screening, or this, that, and the rest. And I sort of paused the other day thinking that unless you have a child of your own, or unless you know a child or can borrow a child, you have no idea how really they are changing and what they're doing. And I was observing my research objects at home the other day, who conveniently fall into a number of ages from 15 down to 9, and I realized that they don't watch TV anymore. It occasionally they might. We were discussing what are family programs last night when we were trying to prepare for this. And certainly in our house, family programs, actually they're not the X Factor anymore, because my 15-year-old daughter would rather walk across cut glass slowly in bare feet than watch the X Factor. My 9-year-old's quite keen on the X Factor, but realizes the 15-year-old doesn't, so it's not quite cool to watch the X Factor. And what they're doing in the middle is they're gaming, they're watching stuff on catch-up, they're watching, if we were a sophisticated technical house, I'm sure they'd be watching Netflix, but we're not. But they would be. They really are engaging with media in a multiple of ways, but what they're not doing is watching telly in the normal traditional way. They're still watching content, but they're just engaging with it in such a fundamentally different way.
I think that's really interesting as well, because I have 3 children, and, you know, my oldest is 11, and going back 5 or 6 years ago, it was very much, if you don't do your homework, if you do something wrong, you're not watching telly. Whereas now, it's, if you don't do your homework, I'm going to take away your iPad, your computer, and you'll have to watch television. And they're like, Mum, don't do that to us. They're not interested in television. They are still interested in great stories, great characters, but they don't want to watch it on the television because they want to interact with it and they want to choose what they want to watch when they want to watch. So.
I love it that they're taking away their iPad. In my house, I'm taking away my iPad. But that's great. Luxury.
It is actually my iPad.
So the audience has changed dramatically. The business has certainly changed. And again, we could talk for hours about that. But, you know, back in the day of those simple times, or, you know, back in the early days of multimedia, of franchise, of licensing, of that, I guess, you know, filtered down to publishing, to licensing, to, which I've always loved, you know, yogurt and pants. Fantastic that you can license, well, in the old days, you could license to a yogurt pot and you could license to a pair of knickers. How fantastic. But that seems to have changed a little bit legislatively as well. But, you know, back in the day when we had Star Wars and the Muppets, it was just so utterly fantastic. Star Wars did its stuff, the Muppets did its stuff. You had the biggest films in the world, the toys are still going, the Muppets for a moment, you had the biggest television show in the world. Really interesting, and in hindsight, spectacularly simple, and oh great, now far too complicated. But I think it got me thinking that really there's kind of a two-track system emerging. You have the studio system and everything that goes with that. And you know, in our world, clearly the biggest of the studios being Disney and the way it's joined up. And then you have, you know, I suppose I would include myself in it, all the poor souls in the independent world, who in large part exist by the goodwill of the studios, because we have to exist alongside, within, it's a changed world, but it's a two-track world, I think. And if for no other way of example, seeing how difficult it is, everyone involved in the world of, for example, financing, putting together preschool television at the moment, whether out of the UK or anywhere else, just knows how spectacularly difficult and competitive it is. So we're struggling, running around in places like MIP and MIPCOM. If you actually added up the cost of putting the show together, we really wouldn't do it, I suspect. By comparison, there's Disney, and this is not criticism. It's I suppose some bit of envy, jealousy, and observation. There's Disney doing Disney Princesses Pets. Isn't that extraordinary? You know, the spin-off of the spin-off of the spin-off. And we're struggling around in Cannes in the rain, trying to put one preschool show together, or whatever it might be. And by the way, of course, who now owns Star Wars and the Muppets? It's that same Disney.
Well, Angus, have you heard of Mixels? Has anybody heard of Mixels? Mixels is a new Lego product that's coming out in 2014. And they've teamed up with Turner, and they're going to be basically making a show based on the product. And Mixels are, to my mind, very similar to Skylanders in that they are little creatures that can be swapped around, and then you make unpredictable stories with them, but the kids are going to be in control of making those stories. So again, that's very interesting that you've got a product, but a studio is joining up to create a program about that product before that product has even been released. So that would never have happened, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But I guess it's just the new world order.
Yeah, no, exactly. So there's clearly, if we're talking about the indie world, which I suspect is really where we are, the independent running around Cannes, there's a change, call it threat, whatever you want. There's not enough money. This is just a little list of obvious stuff. There's not enough money. There's too many producers. There's too few slots. The license fees are too low. There's investor fear for all the above reasons. There's reduced income, if any, on a broad basis. There's audience migration in every way. And now we have to find that audience. It's not as simple as it was back in the day. But let's move quickly on before that enticing job offer to stack shelves in the supermarket just is irresistible. We should talk a bit more about our world. I think the interesting side of all of this, and I think where we sort of come back to the subject of today, which one is deliberately avoiding, i.e. how do you finance things? I think there's a... Because the answer is I have no idea. But I know the framework among which we must work. I think there's an extraordinary revolution going on at the moment. And it's pretty interesting to be in the middle of it. It would be nice to be independently wealthy and in the middle of it. Then you can really observe and enjoy the revolution. But sadly, one has to earn through this revolution. But it's an exciting time. As one says, the business is literally changing around us.
Angus, with a UK tax break, do you think that's made much of a difference? Do you foresee it making a huge difference for independent producers?
I think the tax break is one of those things that's been much heralded and was a big, exciting development for the UK. And you know, I think it's almost more interesting reading the German press and talking to Germans about their lack of tax break and, in the nicest possible way, envy of the UK, which finds itself in an interesting financing position at the moment with tax break, and also the other world that people talk about in the UK. It's all acronyms in the UK, which is a substitute for understanding what's going on, I always find. But we have this thing called EIS in the UK, which is exciting lots of people, and it's called Enterprise Initiative Scheme, and it's been around for a while as a funding mechanism in the UK, and it sits alongside the tax break, and you see people's business plans of the many shows that are sitting with the UK, and I'm sure every other country in the world that are looking for financing. They have finance plans, and they have a category for EIS, they have a category for UK tax break, and then they have, fantastically, as if it's in the bag, they have a bracket for European media funding. And strangely enough, they detail these numbers at the maximum. And it's somewhat of a fantasy land and interesting, and you see, you can chart where the optimism of the finance plan met the reality of the finance is always an interesting point. But the answer with the tax break, I think the tax break, in my mind, is extraordinarily brilliant for high-end drama, because there's two sides to it. It's high-end, top-budget drama. I think that's a really interesting one. I think within the kids' business, I think, of course, it's interesting because it adds some money, and therefore it must be interesting. I don't think in and of itself it changes the dynamic of how difficult it is to fund stuff out of the UK, unless the broadcasters, and I think it's the same issue everywhere else in the world, unless the broadcasters pay more. I mean, we have a situation in the UK where if you are making that preschool show with, say, with CBeebies, such is the economy of the UK that the BBC will give you a very small percentage of your budget, which you then ally that with the tax break, means you still have a whacking great deficit to find, and you're into the exciting, stimulating, pain-in-the-ass world of co-production to put it all together. As soon as you take your work out of the UK, the tax break income reduces. So it's a tricky balancing act. So the answer is yes, of course, it's brilliant.
It's the UK tax break.